This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'll admit I am technically challenged.
But you help build apps.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah. Am I Gilligan?
Appetizers.
What
is this? This is a famous song, right? It's pasta?
It's from the Gilligan's Island theme song. Just walk in with my little fish hat next time.
When Jimmy Butler was a heat, he could not.
A three-hour tour. The weather started getting rough that day. The mighty ship was tossed. If not for the faith of fearless leader, the minnow would be lost. The minnow would be lost.
Is that Gilligan's Island?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Thank you. Where is this week?
Went on a three-hour tour, yet they bought clothes for, like, suitcases to last an entire year.
That does remind me. Was it the Pirates of the Caribbean? They used to have this ride to Disneyland. I don't know. It might still be there.
Still there.
Okay. So I went when I was... I've only been to Disneyland once, and I was 5 years old. Dude, it was the scariest thing in the world.
Yeah,
to me.
I think I got scared as well.
I got a problem with dark, close spaces.
Yeah, I'm claustrophobic.
I don't like any of it.
Like submarines. There's also a submarine ride out there.
I used to not like movie theaters. Didn't want to go in
really?
Until the movie actually started. Yeah. Couldn't do it.
Have the Pirates ride is the one with the raft and you're in the water.
Yeah.
Is that the one where it's dark?
And
there's a few drops there.
Yeah, and there's little different things that, you know, skeletons kind of pop out at you. And yeah, I was not a fan. Like, also, yeah, submarines too. They used to have, I don't know if they still do tours now down by the wharf, but they used to do tours of these old war submarines. And I love history, but I could not get into one of those things.
Let me ask you this.
Like, life in a submarine or life at sea is freaking scary, dude.
You're a former baseball player. Did you ever get an MRI?
Yes, I had to get an MRI once in high school.
We'd never do it.
Although, that one I didn't have a problem with because after 5 minutes, I can fall asleep on command. Like, I can fall asleep literally anywhere.
They literally put you in a coffin.
Yeah, so I close my eyes and I go to sleep and pray that I wake up.
You can do that in a submarine.
Well, yeah, but I'm going to be in a submarine for a month. I got to be in this MRI machine for 30 minutes.
That's true. There's no way in hell I can get into an MRI or get into one of those things. Because I'm thinking
you've never gotten an MRI.
No, I'd rather, you know, walk around with a torn ACL.
Because
you know what I'm thinking? That they're going to forget about you.
They're not going to forget
about you. Well, how do I know?
Because that's what they're paid to do.
There's an earthquake, end of the world, and I'm down entombed in this thing.
Well, if they forget about you, then you're just going to get a boatload of cash. You know, you're going to sue them.
How am I going to see that cash?
Yeah, if he's dead pasta.
Good as that
they're not going to forget about you.
By the way, so you know, it was like a month or month and a half ago when they had this tsunami warning around the city.
Yeah.
Because there was this massive swell up near Eureka.
Yeah. They closed the club, by the way, Dolphin Club.
Not everything's about the Dolphin Club.
Hey, listen, if I can't get my mile in, you sure as hell is.
It deserves a we got to get them as a sponsor, man.
Oh, by the way, that day, I didn't go swimming, but the guy I swam with went swimming, and he got called out, get out
of the cove. Get out of the cove. And it was the Coast Guard in a helicopter that were bullhorning the guy. Like, that was real deal stuff. Like, get out of the water. Get out of the water.
All I could think of was the latest Godzilla movie. There's just going to be this massive wave that was coming into San Francisco. I was freaking everyone in the office out because in my mind, this is 1906. Like, we're all going down, and this thing is completely over with. And I think the boss is still not forgiving me for that day for creating a mass panic. Not on the radio, but just around the office.
Are you familiar with War of the Worlds?
Yeah, Tom Cruise, yeah.
No, there is the...
the original broadcast?
Original broadcast with... Was it Orson Welles?
Yeah.
Orson Welles. Yeah. Who creates this story. It's all fictional.
But...
The aliens who are attacking the world. And...
Speaking of
there
a
were cities all over the country that had a massive evacuation... Because they heard back then, this is pre-television, listening to Orson Welles, you must leave now. They have landed. And people are packing up station wagons and just, I don't know where the hell they thought they were going. But it created mass hysteria. Much like you.
Wow, dude.
Well, I didn't actually go on the radio and say anything about it. That guy was trying to ruin America.
Well, he was doing a show.
Yeah, I don't care. At that time, radio was the one medium that everybody was hooked to. And so if you're just, again, like we were talking about with baseball, every 5 minutes there's a new audience. If someone tunes into the nationally syndicated Orson Welles show or whatever and simply hears that aliens are firing the death beam at Earth, I have to imagine a couple of those people are not going to be too enthused and are going to start packing up their belongings.
Well, there was somebody that had misinformation, and this is when there was sort of that mini Cold War going on with North Korea and the United States, and this is the first Trump administration, and somebody in Hawaii said, or misinterpreted information, and I'm paraphrasing here, and I don't remember the exact way this went down, and
essentially
said that you need to evacuate the island. A nuclear missile has just been launched at Hawaii, which I think in terms of proximity is the closest state from North Korea.
Yeah.
And so for 5 minutes, can you imagine getting that notification, living on the island? A nuclear missile has just been crosshaired to where it is that you live?
Well, I probably just would have headed to Rainbow Drive-In and got my last... my last plate lunch.
Two scoop mac salad to go.
Yeah, give me the mixed plate. Give me the beef braised short ribs. Give me the fish.
Load up, Ron. I just may as well.
Little mac salad and some rice, baby.
Go eat, then evaporate.
Yes, exactly. All right. Let's get into it, Dan. You hear Draymond Green said about Jimmy Butler? Probably the best defensive player he's ever played with. I'm paraphrasing.
That. Absolutely. Just having someone that thinks the game like I do and then obviously having the ability that Jimmy does, it's incredible. Him coming up with the block at the end of the game, he pointed straight to me. He said, I got you. I can do it too. You know, so just having another guy like that to where you don't feel like you need to have to cover up everything, it's amazing. Lucky to have Jimmy here. He's helped take my game to another level, and I'm excited about it.
I think the biggest area of impact that Jimmy Butler is going to have not only today against the Hawks, but if Steph Curry has to miss time, he's going to be Rob Nen. Like, he's going to be the closer. Jimmy Butler, even when Steph Curry's back, I think can be the closer of this basketball team. Steph may hit the silencer. He may hit the dagger. He may hit the night-night. But Jimmy Butler is one guy that can impact both ends of the floor and make the big play. We saw it against Toronto. He had the weak side block with 20 seconds left. Then goes down and makes the free throw to essentially seal the game. But he can make game-changing plays on both ends more than anybody on this basketball team. Like, Draymond can make the game-winning play on defense. Steph can make a game-winning play on offense. But Jimmy does both. And so whether Steph is out because he's dealing with his back injury, or Steph is in, or Draymond's in or out, Jimmy Butler, to me, is the closer of this team now. And they have so many different ways that they can deploy him in under a two-minute situation, that it makes me just feel a lot better that against a high-quality opponent, which they won't get to face until the tail end of this road trip, that he's someone that can bring this home.
You said this, or correct me if I'm wrong, a couple of weeks back, and I sort of pushed back on you that this is still Steph's team, but I think you said that this is Jimmy Butler is the leader of this basketball team, and that's clearly what's happening here.
You look at what's happening in front of our very eyes. Jimmy Butler is becoming the leader of the Golden State Warriors. Now, I know Steph is always going to be Steph, but Steph has never been, quote-unquote, the quintessential leader because he's a bit more quiet. He's not necessarily somebody that's very vocal. He's not the, quote-unquote, typical alpha. And while Draymond Green can be that alpha, but because he's so emotional and has the tendency to punch teammates, that he doesn't necessarily qualify. Well, he'll still be a leader, but it's in terms of the guy that you listen to or that's going to take over this basketball team, even though he's been there a month, it's going to be Jimmy Butler. And we've seen glimpses of that. Did you see him chew out Guy Santos late in the game where he looked at Santos and he threw it away? There was a turnover. And Jimmy Butler threw the ball away, and he said, "You're supposed to be in the damn corner." And we're beginning to see him now getting more vocal. He went after, although it was a bit muted. I believe it was the Denver game, the loss,
Kuminga.
Where there was the untimely Kuminga flagrant foul.
That was against Milwaukee.
Against Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And you could clearly see that it was Jimmy Butler saying, "No. Not now. You don't do that. You have to recognize time and situation. We just closed the gap to 72-70. We're trying to get back into this thing. You don't do that." And you're beginning to see a lot more of that as he becomes more comfortable. He's going to take over that mantle because that's who he is. That's who he's been throughout his entire career. And he could give a rip as to who Steph is and Draymond Green, while he'll respect them. And while those two will be leaders to a certain degree, I think that the guy who is going to be the E.F. Hutton, that when he speaks, people listen, is going to be Jimmy Butler going forward.
Well, in a way, I think his voice is almost a bit more powerful because he's not a true warrior. Like, I said it when they acquired him via trade, and I think it still applies. Like, he's a mercenary. He's here, well paid, to help this team acquire winning, or a win, a big win, a championship. That's the goal. And because of that, and so far, that's all he's done. I think they're now 16-2 when he plays, 16-3 overall. All he's done is help them win games. And so because of that, along with, to your point, his track record, when he speaks, it's not coming from a place of, "Well, I'm here to help, you know, kind of work you along. I'm here to help mentor you." No, like, Butler's at the stage in his career where he doesn't have many years left. Curry doesn't have many years left. Draymond doesn't have many years left. And those two guys, their voice has been such a, you know, an attached part of the fabric of the franchise that you're going to listen when Draymond and Curry speak. But Jimmy, it's like, he speaks with a sense of urgency because he's here and it's happened so quickly that, in a way, I think his voice carries a bit more weight to some of those younger guys, maybe even than Steph or Draymond, or in a different way, I should say. Like, Curry's voice is obviously going to be the most important in any room. But with how vocal is, like, you see the way that Jimmy talks during timeouts. He's always chirping. He's discussing it. It seems like he's using his hands to describe a certain play or the way a player should be positioned. It seems to me more like he's talking about defense than offense, but just where guys are supposed to be, preparing them for situations they're going to step into. He's always talking, and because he's always focused on winning. And because he's not Mr. Golden State Warrior, I do think that his voice, it has a little bit more power to it. And it's firm, and it might have rubbed some people in his past the wrong way, but it's absolutely what this team needs.
Jimmy Butler, this is not a one-off. He wins everywhere he goes, from Chicago, Minnesota, Philadelphia, Miami. He takes teams to the postseason. And the minute he arrives, teams get better. That's proven. And you want to know what else is proven, Ev? When he leaves, teams suck. So if you want to point at a guy and saying, okay, there's a cause, a direct linear cause and effect with one player, it's him, and it always has been. When he leaves a team, they are no longer any good.
look at the Miami Heat and what has happened to that team since the trade deadline and since they got rid of Jimmy Butler. By the way, they have lost an NBA high now, current high, of 10 consecutive games.
Yeah, don't let them break it on Tuesday.
Let me just, and here's a statistic for it. I want everybody to listen to this once again just to underline the importance of Jimmy Butler, because what is it that Butler does better than anybody? It's the fourth quarter. We've talked about it. We've seen it with the Warriors. He takes you home. He finishes games. That's why he is playoff Jimmy. He's built to win and advance. The fourth quarter, as we saw this past week, belongs to Jimmy Butler. I'll go ISO because I want the ball in my hand. We're going to win the damn game. Do you want to know what the plus minus is when it comes to the Miami Heat? Now, the statistic here is basically whether you're outscoring your opponents or whether you're outscored in the fourth quarter of games since Jimmy Butler was traded from the Miami Heat. Now, typically, if you're like a minus eight in the fourth quarter, you're being outscored by 8 points. That's not good. If you're in double digits and you're being outscored by 10 to 12 to 14 points in the fourth quarter, that's terrible. Since Jimmy Butler left the Miami Heat, I got this from Tim Bontemps. I read this in the Washington Post, where he also writes, and I know he's an insider for ESPN.
Yeah.
They are an epic NBA worst since Jimmy Butler left in the fourth quarter. The Miami Heat are being outscored by 29 points. They're a minus 29 since Jimmy Butler walked out the door. So you want to talk about the level of importance of one guy, not only what he's meant throughout his career to winning. And I know, listen, I don't want to pretend that I wasn't here on a live mic saying, don't get this guy, that he's cancerous. Look what it is that he's doing to teams and what he's doing to the Miami Heat. That's true as well. But you cannot deny the fact that this guy impacts winning. And when you don't have him, you're not good. And when you first get him, you're very, very good.
He's Harbaugh. He's Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh, wherever he goes, wins immediately. And then at the end, leaves a burning house. Like, that's what happens, because
Billy Martin was like that, by the way. Go ahead.
Dude, wasn't he, like, hired and fired seven times by George Steinbrenner?
Yankees, yeah, but he would always take over a team, like the A's, and it was Billy Ball. And then after a while, he'd punch out his pitcher. He was so fiery that after a while, you're just like, yeah, he got into a fight with Ed Whitson, who was his ace with the New York Yankees, and Ed Whitson went on the DL because he got in a fight with his manager. You don't see that very often anymore, but sorry to interrupt. But that's the burnout factor I think you were referring to.
East Bay kid, by the way.
Berkeley.
Yes, sir. West Berkeley, in fact. Shout out to the East Bay. That's where I'm from. The point is, I also think that one of the reasons why Jimmy eventually, I don't know, things go wrong is because he wears on people. Like, he is so freaking intense. And I think that's good. And the one reason that I also think it's worked, I don't know if better's the word immediately, because he's won everywhere he's gone. But, like, the first, even back to his days with the Bulls, he's literally won his first 15 games everywhere. Bulls, first 15 games as a rookie, 10-5. He gets to Minnesota. I think they went 11-4 with the Philadelphia 76ers, 11-4 with the Miami Heat. They started 12-3 with the Warriors, his first 15 games, 14-1. Literally every single place he's gone, they win. But it's because of how intense he is. And I just don't know if there's that many people around the league that are willing to be that forceful and passionate day after day after day. And the commitment to winning is a really hard thing, I think, for a lot of people. I know we talked about how you don't like this, but the emotional toll that it takes on you when you're just pounding your body into the ground so hard, so long, trying to get that victory. But Jimmy's playing with two guys that have been equally committed to winning as him. He just doesn't have the championships. Draymond Green and Steph, I think, are, while they're not obviously as intense as Jimmy Butler, they're as committed to winning, and they're willing to go through whatever the emotional damage, the physical damage done to their bodies in order to acquire that. That's, to me, why this has also been a perfect marriage, because Jimmy Butler, I think, has finally found a team. And I don't know if it means they're going to win a championship, because they're pretty old and they're past their primes. But he's finally found two other players that are, I think, that he feels that are equally as committed to winning as him. And that is an innate respect that I don't believe is common in the NBA. Along with the fact that Steve Kerr has done it at a high level, both as a player and a head coach, it's like Butler can finally, I don't know if it's fall in line, but he doesn't have to pull everyone with him. Like, he's not playing a one-man tug of war. At the very least, he's got two other guys, and maybe three if he includes the coach, that are pulling with him finally. And I think that's brought him some peace.
It's kind of why I talk about this being the last dance. Now, listen, I know it's not Jerry Krause, and you're not going to break up the team at the end of the season. But I don't know if you're still on board with this, but I thought we were hand in hand. That if the Warriors are going to win that NBA championship, to me, it has to be this year. For a couple of reasons. One of which, that they're old. And secondly, I think you can still get OKC. We haven't gotten into our OKC conversation. I think OKC is still gettable right now. It's not going to be that way for a while. Because at some point, they're going to grow up and the light's going to go on. But you can still get it. But it has to happen this year. And the other being is the burnout factor with Jimmy Butler, which is real.
Yeah.
Like, the first couple of years is the honeymoon, or especially that first year. After a while, Jimmy Butler becomes Jimmy Butler. Very good basketball player, but you want to win now. Here's something for you. Just let this soak in before you give a knee-jerk reaction. If he goes,
I have to talk.
If he goes to Phoenix, all right, let's just say, because he wanted to go to Phoenix.
I like this.
And the Suns wanted him. He did not want to go to the Warriors. It seemed like it was a foregone conclusion. If he goes to the Suns, are the Suns the number six seed right now? Are the Suns the Warriors right now?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yes.
I'm right on board.
I actually think that what the Suns are missing, if you watch them play basketball, what they're missing is Jimmy Butler.
Yes.
They're missing someone that is a lead dog who can control a game and just calm things down. Like, they're so disjointed when they play.
And define all those roles.
Let everyone fit into where they're supposed to be. No, Jimmy Butler would be perfect for the Phoenix Suns. And while I would like to think that the Warriors probably are in a better spot than the Suns would have been, neither here nor there. The point is, Butler, you can understand why the first day he got here, he's like, dude, I can win anywhere. You know, I think it was Sam Amick up in Sacramento when Jimmy first got here. He didn't play in that Sacramento game, but they asked him, hey, you know, there's the reports that you didn't want to sign an extension here. You really wanted to get to Phoenix. What made you change your mind? And he dodged the question, but basically his response was, dude, I'm Jimmy Butler. I win wherever I go. And I don't think he's wrong. If he had gone to Phoenix, I think they win. The other team that he refused to go to, which I think he really could have helped, is Memphis. Memphis was a team that was interested in him that he did not want to go to. I think Milwaukee was also on a list of teams that he did not prefer. He would have helped any of those basketball teams.
Memphis would have been scary.
I agree. If he's with the Grizzlies right now, I mean, I don't know what they would have had to give up to get him, but assuming it's a package similar to what the Warriors gave up, which is relatively nothing considering what they got back, Memphis would absolutely, any of these teams Butler would have gone to would have been scary.
When you talk about scary teams right now, because it is such a slippery slope with the Warriors. It's so precarious right now, as well as they're playing. This is a team that, again, what are they? They're a game away from the fifth seed, and then they're just a game away from sliding right back into the play-in tournament.
Yeah.
Maybe we can pick this up on the other side. But look out, here come the Los Angeles Clippers. And here comes Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah. Dude, he looks a little slimmer. I don't know if, I mean, because he's obviously
he looks like
a big
Kawhi
guy,
Leonard of 5 years ago all of a sudden.
He doesn't have as much beef, though, but it's like he's a little more agile. He's kind of quick. I mean, he's getting up there in terms of age, but, dude, you look around the West, especially for, let's say, I would say the Clippers, the Warriors, and the Lakers have this in common. Health is wealth. If those teams are 100%, they absolutely believe they have a chance to win a championship. Yeah, I agree. I would throw the Clippers in there because if Kawhi Leonard stays healthy, and that's been the biggest question about him for like the last 3-4 seasons, really since he got to Los Angeles, yeah, they're going to be scary.
But the Clippers just beat the Cavaliers. Zubac was 28-20.
Well, apparently you say the Cavs stink now, so. You know, they're losing a bunch of games. But yeah, Zubac, he abused, who was it, Evan Mobley?
28 points, 20 boards.
You think Evan Mobley's going to be Defensive Player of the Year?
Could be Draymond.
Let's talk about it on the other side. Warriors this week on 95.7 The Game with Evan Giddings and Dan Devone. 888-957-9570 is the number if you want to get in on the conversation. Also, our text line. Shout out to our YouTube chat powered by First NorCal Credit Union. I'm going to fight with Dan about the OKC Thunder on the other side when we come back.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
All right, Evan Giddings, Dan Devone, Steven Rizzotto, a.k.a. Pasta on the ones and twos. And, you know, all right, before we take the boxing gloves out, Dan, before we step into the ring, go 12 rounds on this whole playoff scenario you want to dig into, I want to start this segment with a little bit of love. There was a really cool story last night that was making the rounds in the NBA, and it has to do with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Now, explain this to you during the break, but they have a player on their team, Joe Ingles, who is age 37, been in the league for a long time. And he has a son who's autistic. And it's very difficult for his son to be in public areas. It's very difficult for him to be around a lot of people. And so he doesn't and hasn't had a chance to watch his dad play basketball in real life. And so Chris Finch, head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves, was informed before the game that Ingles' son was going to be attending their game against the New Orleans Pelicans. So Ingles, who, again, does not play. This guy this season has played in, he gets 6 minutes per game on average. Didn't play against Miami. He's played 7 minutes the last three games. He starts him, Chris Finch does, to allow his son to see him play for the very first time in his life. And I thought it was really, really cool. And here's what Chris Finch said after the game.
Yeah, it's emotional. Sometimes you got to do the human thing. We always talk about all these minutes matter, and those minutes matter for another reason. So someone put it in my head today and as an idea to make sure that Joe can see the floor, and I figured if we're going to do it, let's do it in style. So guys were behind it, and I think it gave us the right boost that we needed and change of energy. So not often that you get to do those types of things, but we're really happy that we could.
They won by 40 points. They won going away. The Pelicans are not a good team, but the point is sometimes Steve Kerr talks about this all the time, like the human aspect of the game. And I know we were having some fun with Curry being out and needing a rest day, but it's like those kinds of things do matter to teams. And I thought it was a great move by Chris Finch to do that. And clearly his team responded. And who knows, it might be something that can energize his club and bring them closer together, which is what you need at this time of the year.
Yeah, it's really good to see. And I think it was Mike Conley that gave up his spot, and the two have a relationship going back to their days in Utah. And that's probably when Ingles had his best years, I want to say, the left-hander, the Aussie.
Yeah.
Good shooter back in the day, but that's good to hear. You know, we do forget, and Steve Kerr, you're right, he's a good reminder that you develop these relationships, and we just think of these guys as players, rotational. He's the six, he's the four, he's the five, he's coming off the bench. These are his minutes, but they are human beings. And maybe even going, this might be a bit of a stretch, but when you think about the Stephen A. and the LeBron James sort of going head-to-head, we forget that these guys are also fathers, and that sometimes the emotion comes to the forefront, but it's, you know, these are people, and it's good to see people like Finch as well as the Steve Kerrs remind us of this from time to time. Good story. It's good to hear stuff like that.
And I think Joe Ingles explained a little bit further just what he has to go through on a day-to-day basis. If we could cue that up, Steve.
Yeah, because I just don't, like, the reality of it is I just don't think people understand, like, it, and it gets kind of confused because of the money and the lifestyle of what we get to live. It is that, like, there's a little less stress because I can afford to pay for Jacob to get what he needs, but it doesn't take away the meltdowns of the supermarket or, like, there's been so many times with my wife that is laying on the floor in public and you can feel people staring at you, you know they're judging. They know they're making comments about it. like, but they have no idea what he's gone through that day or the night before or the situation. And ever since he got diagnosed, it's been what we've tried to do with the awareness of life. Like, it doesn't matter who you are or your lifestyle, your money, like whatever. Like, Jacob goes deep. Jacob doesn't really care that I play basketball. Like, in terms of that, he wants his dad home, and every time I say I'm going to basketball, he's like, ugh, like he gets.
Yeah, so again, it's, you know, just trying to shine a light, pardon me, on the human aspect of things, which we don't often get to see. And I think, like, the Warriors do a really good job at highlighting just how much the human side of things intersects with basketball. And to me, last night, that was quite simply the best story in the NBA.
And there's something about Aussies that just makes it so down to earth. I don't know. I always thought Andrew Bogut was one of the funniest guys in the league, and maybe I'm not, you know, connecting dots here, but there's just something very real about listening to. I could listen to an Aussie talk all day, man.
I think they're
good. They're like, they have a great sense of humor. They're all, for the most part, down to earth, a little crazy. Russell Crowe comes to mind. I mean, there's some nut jobs out there. Also very pretty. Shout out Margot Robbie, but. Aussies are just seem like good. They seem like somebody will sit down, have a beer or 12 with you, and just be funny and talk and not be the furthest thing from pretentious.
Yeah, I'd get drunk under the table by an Aussie.
That's saying something.
Any day of the week. Easy. All right, easy. Trying to do better. All right, you want to fight now?
Let's go.
Okay.
So they're never a fight. It's like, you know, ask, like, is a hammer and a nail, do you consider that a fight? Like, I mean, I destroy you every
Stop
time. Like,
it. What is
a fight? It's not even.
Jesus.
All right. Pasta, we have boxing gloves somewhere in the back. You want to discuss why the Oklahoma City Thunder are kibble to the Golden State Warriors, and I want to know why. I mean, look, I think the Warriors could beat them if they played them in a 7-game series.
Well, that's all I'm saying.
No, you're not.
Move on. Let's drop the mic and go to the next subject.
But it would be a damn difficult task.
Well, no doubt. I'm not saying they're going to get swept.
Okay, now you're backing up.
No, I'm saying that.
You said they'd sweep them in 3 games.
All right, nobody said that. I'm just saying that all of this thunder, a dominant basketball team during the regular season, and they deserve all the accolades and the attention, although some people feel as though that they are being overlooked and disrespected. I don't think so. I think everybody thinks about the OKC Thunder, and well, they should, as being the favorite coming out of the West and one of the favorites to win the title this year. All I'm saying is experience is real. And the Thunder have never done it. Last year, they were the number one seed and got bounced in the second round after beating the Pelicans by that of the Dallas Mavericks. And until I see it, I'm not acknowledging crap at this point when it comes to OKC. And I think saying that doesn't make me delusional or a hater on OKC. You know who their oldest player is in the rotation? And this is a good thing when you really,
Caruso?
When you're thinking about building a team. But it's SGA, 26 years of age.
Oh, they're starters.
Starters.
Yeah.
And everybody else is 23 years and younger. Now, that's where you want to be, because I think even the Warriors would be envious of a program like that, where you have your entire future in front of you, not to mention all the draft picks that Sam Presti has been able to gather over the, I mean, they're in the catbird seat. But when it comes to the here and now, 26 years of age and never done that before is a detriment when you're going to the postseason. Now, again, could they be as dominant as they were during the regular season and the postseason? Sure. But I just need to see it before I can recognize them as being a team I'm penciling in coming out of the West.
So the only issue I have with the way that people talk about the Thunder is it sounds like they're making them out to be like the 2021 Utah Jazz. I don't know if you remember that team, but they were the one seed. No one thought that they were going anywhere in the playoffs. That team also only won 52, 53 games. It was just on my mind because we were talking about Joe Ingles and Mike Conley. This Oklahoma City Thunder team is going to win at least 65 games.
Could be 70.
could be 70 games. They demand your respect.
They got it.
No, they don't. You're talking about them like they're the Houston Rockets.
They have my respect of what it is that they've done during the regular season. I'm just saying that now is a different animal. Experience matters when it comes to the postseason. The experience may not matter when it comes to Major League Baseball, postseason, NFL. It matters in the NBA. You got to get your battle scars. You usually got to knock on that door a couple of times before you kick that SOB down. But it is a real thing when it comes to the NBA. When you talk about your rites of passage of becoming a young team that's graduating to NBA championship level.
Well, I do think that, yeah, experience obviously matters. The one thing that I have pause with in regards to the Thunder is their best player, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who I think is going to be the league MVP. Players that are heavily reliant on free throws, a la Harden, you know, you could throw any grifter into there. They typically tend to struggle in the postseason. Now, I think that SGA is, they're not as much of a one-man band as people make them out to be, because I just don't think that, I think Jalen Williams is really good. I think that Chet Holmgren is a solid number two or number three option on some nights. But the difference to me between them and, let's say, like one of the James Harden-led Rockets teams would be they defend at a historic level. Like, they are unbelievable on defense. And that's just a team that in a seven-game series, while Shai getting to the free throw line 11 or 12 or 13 times a game might not translate, while he might not average 32 or 33 a night like he is currently in the regular season on 54% shooting, defense, that's going to translate in the postseason. And the fact that they can defend at the level that they have 1 through 5, with Hartenstein, they can go smaller with Chet. Like, I feel like they're going to be a matchup nightmare for whoever they play.
Just about every team does this, where you see the Warriors certainly do. You'll see a substitution for defense, offense for defense, or defense for offense. OKC doesn't do that. Because, to your point, they have so many players that are two-way players. And when I watch OKC play, and I've watched them a lot this year. I was flying the other day, and I watched an entire OKC game. And what they typically, every time I watch them play, you know what they do? There'll be a stretch of maybe 4 or 5 minutes, and maybe a team will go on 6 or 7 possessions where you're not going to score. Like, every single game, there's at least one stretch of 4 minutes where they stone you and you don't score a basket, and as a result, they get in transition. Suddenly, it's a 15, 25-point game, and they blow you out. Every single game, that has been their earmark. I recognize what it is that they have done defensively. They are very, very good. And not only that, as much as we talk about Holmgren and SGA and Jalen Williams, the depth, somebody is talking about Aaron Wiggins. I mean, Wallace, all of these players that they have.
They're young. They're definitely young.
But that's just it. I need to see you do it at this level, because the regular season certainly allows you the number one seed and the home court advantage. But I'm not even penciling you into the semifinals.
What?
Well, Ev, we just talked about, okay, if they play, there's a good chance they'll play the Clippers in the first round, would you, or Minnesota.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are you going to be shocked if the Clippers knock off OKC? It's going to be an upset.
I would. I would be shocked.
Shocked.
I would be shocked.
Well, maybe we have a different interpretation of the word shocked.
Well, surprised.
Brought back to life. Resuscitated.
like the Warriors? Like the Warriors of the trade deadline?
The jaws of life have just
been ripped apart.
No, I think that,
I mean,
if you saw Kawhi Leonard, who's shown signs of being Kawhi Leonard, Harden,
they're the favorite in the West. That's why I would be shocked.
Well, they were the favorite in the West a year ago.
Clearly
the number one seed, and I know Denver was going back and forth with them, but they were the number one seed in a very good West last year.
I thought they were tied with Denver, right? I mean, technically, they had the tiebreaker, but Oklahoma City, Denver both won 57 games, and then Minnesota won 56. So, like, the top of the West was very clustered. This year, they are by far and away the best team in the Western Conference.
I'm not going to be surprised, because when you're the problem with the OKC and Houston and maybe Memphis to a certain degree is that the bottom half of the conference, for whatever reason, is playing their best basketball. And they have the experience. You're talking about LeBron James and Luka Doncic are all looming, man. And you're also talking about the Warriors with Butler and Steph Curry and Draymond Green. And you can even say, you could throw Minnesota in there. You know, Minnesota, Ant-Man learned a lot last year. Rudy Gobert has been there and done that before. I mean, there is experience now. And the Clippers with Harden and Kawhi Leonard and Norm Powell, I mean, you're taking on teams that are in the lower rung of the ladder in the Western Conference that have playoff and NBA championship experience. And I'm one of those that leans towards experience as opposed to the youth that's been dominant during the regular season.
Well, I'm actually glad we're talking about this, because you know who plays tomorrow night? The Thunder and the Clippers.
Yeah, but games right now don't.
Inglewood.
Games don't mean anything right now.
They mean stuff for the Warriors. Well, you can't lose tonight against the Hawks.
I know, but listen, shame on the NBA. Because, you see these games. Again, I saw a game because, I was flying again, and I happened to see. I'm like, okay, I'm going to kill 4 hours. I'm like, oh, my league pass I've got. Let's see who's playing live. I've got the Brooklyn Nets and the Boston Celtics. Cool. And chew off 3 hours watching, 3.5 hours watching this game.
That was competitive.
By the way, just before tip off, we've just learned that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown will not be available for tonight's game. Well, screw you, NBA. Like, really? You know what they should do, Ev? In all seriousness?
Talk to me.
This idea of not playing your guys, because nobody plays right now. The Lakers got blown out the other night, and there was no Luke and there's no LeBron. Meanwhile, LeBron's at his kids' state championship
game.
Hold
the Warriors' feet to the fire. They sat Curry.
This is what it is that the NBA has to do. So Lauri Markkanen and the Utah Jazz, but they held out Markkanen and the Utah. So either teams are resting players for the postseason, or they're trying to lose on purpose to get Cooper Flagg. It's one or the other right now.
Yeah, but that's why the teams that are in the middle of the West, like, yeah, there are some guys. I think LeBron has, a pseudo-injury. I think the Warriors can take it kind of easy with Steph. But you still have to play hard and try to win games. I mean, I think that while the teams are not at full strength, you are seeing the level of effort escalate as the season moves towards the postseason, because you're trying to get the seed you want, or the highest seed possible.
So this is what the Utah Jazz, they got fined $10,000.
$100,000.
$100,000. Still, I don't care.
It might as well be $10,000.
$100,000 is nothing to them. You know what they've got to do? So, not to give you another New York reference, but
you'll do it anyway.
Cease and I are going to see a play called Good Night and Good Luck. And it's starring George Clooney.
What up, C?
Who is playing Edward R. Murrow, going back to the days of communism, the threat of communism back in the late 1950s here in the United States. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something, in Broadway.
About communism?
If George Clooney is not performing that Thursday night that we go to the show, and it's his understudy, and let's say George Clooney is dealing with a bad sore throat, or he's had four performances the whole week and they're just going to sit him out, guess what? On my ticket, I can get a full refund. That's the way Broadway plays, and that's the way the NBA ought to play. You want to sit Steph Curry, you want to sit LeBron James, and I paid for this ticket, or you want to sit the Joker as well as Jamal Murray and Christian Brown, and I find out an hour before I sit down, okay, give me a full refund on my ticket. You hit NBA teams where they live in the pocketbook, and you'll see a change.
Is that true?
Yes.
There's a refund. Like, so when you when you bet on baseball, you can select starting pitchers, and if those pitchers get scratched, then your bet is void and you're getting your money back. That's the same thing with Broadway.
Yes, if you go to see Othello right now, starring Denzel Washington, if Denzel Washington isn't there and it's his understudy, you're getting your money back.
Can I still go?
Yeah, you can go.
And I get to go for free?
Well, it's assuming that you don't know beforehand, like an hour before the show, like an hour before the Nuggets and the Warriors tip off.
Yeah.
You're entitled to your money so that you can go get stoned and drunk like a good young fellow as a entire broadcasting career in front of him should.
Well, that's only on Sundays when I take days off.
Rochelle, thank you very much. 415 with the Seinfeld knowledge.
The text line is coming in. That's incredible.
I'll give you another Seinfeld knowledge for you, 415. You might be the only one in the audience that
gets
this.
What's up, Molly?
Is all this Jimmy Butler talk, Jimmy, it reminds me of the episode of the guy that Elaine dated that will refer to his name in the third person. He was Jimmy, but he would talk about Jimmy doesn't like people putting his hands, don't touch Jimmy, don't mess with Jimmy. And she thought she was talking about somebody else, but he was actually talking about himself.
I just watched the episode the other night where George is trying to impress this woman, so he quits his job. And she doesn't walk out with him. And he comes back the next day like he didn't just quit his job.
Oh, yeah, well that...
And tries to sit down at the board
that's
table.
That's so classic.
Costanza's just sitting there in the corner, and everyone's wondering why he's still in the building.
Well, you know where that idea was from?
So no.
Larry David, the original creator, obviously along with Seinfeld... He did that. He quit SNL as a writer. And he goes to his apartment. So he had a guy who lived across from him who was exactly like that of Kramer.
So
and the guy
great.
Comes into his apartment and says, this is in New York City. He's like, why did you quit, man? It's like, what are you going to do now? He's like, well, I didn't really think about that. And so this guy goes, this is what you ought to do. Just go back to SNL the next meeting, which was the next day, and just pretend you never did it. Because they were... Larry David would write these great scripts, and they would never come to fruition. They would never use his material. So finally he said, screw you guys. He has this big speech. You don't know what the hell you're doing. You can't recognize talent. I'm out of here. And he gets home, and he's like, what the hell did I just do? So he goes back to SNL like the next day and sits in a meeting, and he was fine.
Oh, man.
Seinfeld holds up.
Yeah, Costanza was not fine, however. All right, let's wrap the segment with John in San Francisco.
Jimmy
welcome to Warriors this week.
707, well done.
Yes, he can. John, what's going on, man? Good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. You guys are doing a great job, as always. To get back to the autism issue that you guys were talking about, last year I went to a training event with the Golden State Warriors focusing on autism awareness. And a guy who played with Draymond Green at Michigan State was the key speaker, Anthony Iani, who's also a basketball coach, and he played with Draymond, and he was recognized as one of the first autistic players in college basketball, and they put on a great program about awareness, and they have a room for people at Chase, spectators who may... find the game too loud or too bright with the lights, and they can let the people sit in there. So I just wanted you guys to know that.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, I do remember reading about that, John, when they were creating Chase Center. They, I don't know if they're called safe rooms, but to your point, I want to say there is a room sponsored by Draymond Green. I don't know if it's called the Draymond Green Room, but it's something along those lines where that's where people that have autism can go when they're feeling unsettled during a game. So, no, I appreciate you enlightening us, John. Thank you so much. And again, the Warriors do a really good job at bringing the human aspect of things into basketball and making everyone feel like it's an incredible environment, which it is, and it should be. It should be all-inclusive. But we got to hit a break here. Evan Giddings alongside Dan DeVone on 95.7 The Game. This is Warriors This Week. If you want to get into the conversation, 888-957-9570 is the number. Also, for the text line, our YouTube chat, and Twitch chat, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. On the other side, thank you, Pasta. I got a gripe. I got an issue. And it's not necessarily with the Warriors. It's not even with the NBA. I got a problem with coaches, Dan.
By the way, I just destroyed you on OKC. No,
you didn't.
All right.
Well, you might have. No.
Pasta, you want to chime in here as the judge?
I'm not taking sides here. I like both you guys.
Come on, WCAL.
Pick
bro.
A side.
Yeah, don't be Sweden.
He's from the city. He's going to be with you the whole time.
WCAL,
even though
bro.
He doesn't realize
WCAL, but you went to SI.
I know. You're a rabbit. Why are you guys rabbits, by the way?
I don't know. Nobody ever referred to me as a rabbit there.
You're a rabbit till you die. You'll always be a rabbit because you never could beat SI.
And there's our musical segment on Warriors This Week, brought to you by Dan Devone.
Corny and cheesy. Let's get the hell out of here.
We'll be back after this.